relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and The Battle for 1600.
From the ReliefFactor.com studios, this is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
And with the strains of the great James Horner's orchestral theme to the second Star Trek movie, truly majestic, one of my favorites. Welcome back, dear friends. How do we get to the second hour already? We will be joined by the lawyer of that pub owner in Staten Island that is resisting the governor's attempts to close down all small businesses later in this hour. Congressman Mo Brooks will be with us with his plan to stop the verification of the fraudulent elections across this nation. And then the man who's been fighting for the president in the trenches in Nevada, the chairman of the American Conservative Union, Matt Schlapp, will be with us. And then have I played that little clip of the president's speech from the White House Christmas party? Yes, I have not. We have to do that as well. But first things first, we have to keep to our regular schedule here on America First. And it is time for our weekly talk to none other than Lord Conrad Black, the author of A President Like No Other, Donald J. Trump. Follow him right now on Twitter, Conrad M. Black. His latest piece, you can find it, Am Greatness. That's American Greatness, amgreatness.com. No politician is more popular or unpopular than Trump. Welcome back, Lord Black.
Thank you, Sebastian. Always a pleasure.
So you set this up, your latest piece is a little bit like one of the Poirot mysteries of Agatha Christie. You set up a series of truly mysterious conundra that then you provide the answer to. And I'd like, before we get to other topics, just to walk through them. And let's discuss the one that, in order, chronological order, 95% of the national political media detest this man as an individual who's had dealings with him in the business world, yourself, who's written this seminal work about him. You've called him the most successful first-term president, surpassed only by Lincoln, FDR, or Nixon. What is the explanation for why they so loathe this man?
Well, the explanation I offered, to give a fully accurate explanation one would be confident of, requires the mind reading of a large number of people, the national political media, and you'd have to go through them individually. I mean, I don't understand the workings of the mind of a Jake Tapper or a Wolf Blitzer, even though Wolf worked for me at one time. Don Lemon, I just don't understand how they think. Michelle Goldberg, even. They're not rational on this subject. But my best guess is that it is a combination of response to Trump's stated dislike and contempt for them as people who did, as a group, a poor job of explaining the, as he held it to be, incompetent performance of our bipartisan ruling group in the years between Reagan and the Trump presidency. And secondly, the media resented the fact that he kind of ran on their backs and they disparaged him and he won anyway. It was a terrible act of lèse majesté for anyone to debunk the media, tell them to get lost, deal with social media as the conduit to his followers and to the public, and win. And if there was another factor, and I guess there is, that most of the so-called working press, I never found when I employed a great number of them, most of them worked that hard, but the so-called working press are to the left, and they fancy themselves cultured people, and they find Trump personally boorish and obnoxious.
So is it a class issue? I mean, as somebody who was born in the UK, a nation that is riven with class structure to this day, I came here seeing less evidence of that. But could it be really a class issue that he's déclassé?
Not a traditional class issue in the British sense. Not where they care if your grandfather was a major general or a cabinet minister or something like that. And so it's not a social class thing. I mean, Trump went to good universities, to Fordham and Wharton,
yes,
to the New York Military Academy. His father was a well-to-do man, but he's an outer borough New Yorker. He's not Manhattan. And I think it's a snobbery based on attitude and just approach. I mean, Trump is a blunt and let us face facts. He's an acquired taste. He's a very pleasant man personally, I find, but as I think you do. But
I do.
As a public personality, he is a bit garish and boastful. And while I've never seen a group more conceited than media, they do resent it in other people upon whom they report. They expect everyone upon whom they report to be charming gentlemen of the FDR, JFK, Ronald Reagan type, you see.
Is it? But here there's a little hiccup in the chronology of the events, because he was, if not exactly a darling, he was feted by Hollywood, by the media, the music industry. He had 14 seasons of perhaps the most popular reality TV show in modern times. And then there was a caesura, there was a break, a sudden reversal. What was his cardinal sin? Was it crossing the line into politics?
I think it was. Now, again, this is supposition. I cannot honestly say that I spend a great deal of time in my...
But in your estimation, as an observer?
Yeah, no, from that perspective, I think they found him amusing as a public personality, the way they would cover social activities, his romantic activities and marital ups and downs. And so that tabloid New York media loved him, but that didn't mean that the very sober, serious public commentators of the networks did. But that tabloid Manhattan media liked him as a subject, as a worthy person. But once he ceased to be an impresario, a television star, and an entertaining public figure, and put himself out as a candidate for the great office of president, and then became the president, they were mortally affronted by it. And some of it, to follow up on your question exactly, I think was probably envy. They thought that Trump was kind of one of them. He was a guy in the public eye in the media all the time, and they never thought of him as the direct successor to George Washington. And they were outraged and envious when he achieved that, especially since they had almost unanimously dismissed his candidacy as unutterable nonsense, so that no chance of success.
And how much in all of this, how much of a part does it play that he didn't go with the political identity of the Manhattan socialites of the mainstream media, that when he ran for the first time for president, he ran as a Republican? Was that the last straw, potentially?
I would probably, yes, as a Republican, they could tolerate that. I mean, they didn't mind Nelson Rockefeller, for example. but he debunked all of their theories. It said essentially that the bipartisan, let's say, shared view of how to do things, McCain and Mitt Romney and the Bushes signed on to 90% of the Clinton and Obama thoughts, you know.
Yes.
And for Trump to stand up and say this is bunk, these people have misgoverned the country, they're just essentially serving themselves and not serving the people, and I can do better, and then was elected to do better, they took it personally. They took it as to go back to your British origins, a slap in the face with a wet kipper, and they didn't like it.
Oh, yes, I have visions now of certain Monty Python skits with two gentlemen in their plus fours and their pith helmets and two large fish. We are talking to the wonderful Lord Conrad Black. He is the author of A President Like No Other, Donald J. Trump. Follow him right now, Conrad M. Black. We are discussing his latest piece at one of our favorite websites. It is American Greatness, amgreatness.com. It is No Politician is more popular or unpopular than Donald Trump. And we will continue with the second mystery that we will have to unfurl and solve here on the Salem Radio Network, broadcasting from the ReliefFactor.com studios just outside the fetid insalubrious. Is it a swamp? Is it a viper's nest? Is it a rat's den? Take your pick. They all fit perfectly. I'm Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to the 45th President of the United States. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, stay on this channel. See, let me repeat that for you who were listening or watching on YouTube. That was the president addressing us last night saying, there's going to be a lot of action in the next 6 weeks. So buckle up and get ready. We are back here on America First with the author of A President Like No Other, Donald J. Trump and the Restoring of America, Lord Conrad Black, on Twitter, Conrad M. Black. And we are dissecting his latest piece at American Greatness, where several mysteries are described to us, and then Lord Black explains them. The second one, which has been vexing me, Conrad, for so long, not just with regards to this election, but with general support for the modern, what I deem to be a radicalized Democrat Party. And let me just read from your piece. Another mystery is why the very wealthy people of America prefer a traditional liberal Democrat standing on an outright socialist platform to a tax-cutting fellow billionaire. Now, I know the proviso, we can't psychoanalyze 70, 80 million Americans, but in terms of political trends and as a historian yourself, is there any hypothesis as to how so many people with lots of money and a lot to lose could press the yes button or fill in that oval circle for a man who really has bended the knee at socialist rhetoric and socialist policies?
My best guess is, one, a lot of them, especially the New York ones, are envious that Trump was sort of one of them and suddenly became the president. And they think, I mean, this is an identifiable psychological trend where people resent the sudden elevation of one of their peers. They all congratulate you, but in their minds, you know, they're saying that bastard, that phony, it's outrageous, you know. How dare he? Who does he think he is? And I think there's some of that. Second, a great many of the people who are really pouring out the money here, like a Zuckerberg, for example, there are new media people, and they don't have traditional capitalist views. It's not like the traditional well, sort of a Dwight Eisenhower rich Republican who'd worked 30 years in a business to get to the top of it, and really had a sense of striving for a long time to get to where they are, and a real wariness of those who would want to overtax them and redistribute their money to others. A lot of these people have made a great deal of money very quickly in these new industries, and think they are above that kind of thing. Think that the division between capital and labor is artificial. They don't have many employees. The money came in like Niagara Falls coming down on them. I'm not saying they didn't have ingenious ideas and show great boldness to make the money. That's not the issue. But they don't think like say Alfred P. Sloan, what 40 years or whatever it was, head of General Motors.
Yes.
They think they're in a kind of new class here where they're above that kind of thing, and they are extremely wealthy, and believe that they can help confect a new world liberated from that sort of conflict. And Trump is a traditionalist who acts as if he thinks it's a zero-sum game as between the employers and the employees. And of course, this complete rubbish. Trump has delivered for the working class of America better than any president since Franklin D. Roosevelt, and done it by different methods to Roosevelt. I mean, Roosevelt put them back at work, but you know, Trump has cut their taxes, incentivized the areas of the disadvantaged through the enterprise zones, and gathered in to the mainstream of the American economy the minorities, whereas the new rich of Silicon Valley and up to a point parts of Wall Street the money kind of came down from heaven to them, and they think that process entitles them to purport to ally themselves with the traditional left. And it's a fraud. It's, one, a misconception, and two, a fraud. And they're well taken care of. I mean, the tax breaks given by the Clintons to their chums in Wall Street and Silicon Valley isn't a tambourine they were beating when they were out talking to people in Scranton the so-called Rust Belt.
I think this is absolutely fascinating, and I think it holds water to say that there are billionaires in the tech industry who really have a very, very poor grasp, if any, of how capitalism really functions. And I'm being completely extemporaneous here. I think that makes sense. But what about those, for example, like a Soros, who have been around the block a few times, who should know that capitalism isn't a limited pie with only X number of slices? When individuals like that become radical leftists in their policies or how they spend their money, have you posited a possible explanation for that?
Yeah, well, in the case of George Soros, I know him a little bit. I haven't seen him for years, but I used to see him sometimes. And he is sort of sui generis, you know.
Yes.
I mean, he is a fugitive from Nazism, originally a Jewish Hungarian, and his views are eccentric. He's in that category with people like Cyrus Eaton or Armand Hammer, who
were
wealthy men, and as you say, you know, built up their wealth through their own wits and ingenuity over many, many years, and no one can withhold that from George. He's made a great deal of money, and he's done it on his intelligence and his acuity. But he's also it's perhaps not quite the right metaphor to say carrying the baggage, but at least is profoundly affected by the background of pogroms and totalitarianism and war and violence that he fled. And it is not for me to say what the correlation in his own thinking and motivations is between rank opportunism, posturing, and a sincere belief that he is a reforming and insightful analyst and commentator on current affairs. But some blending of these things makes him a contrarian and an outsider to, you know, traditional Wall Street or country club Republican socioeconomic thinking.
And I must add also, I think it's fair to say, if you listen to him and read his writings, also rather an idolatry or an idolizing of a certain philosopher called Karl Popper. But we'll leave that for next time. In the meantime, you must order right now. It is newly updated. The fabulous book, A President Like No Other, Donald J. Trump and the Restoring of America. And follow our friend Lord Conrad Black at Conrad M. Black on Twitter and his writings at AmericanGreatnessAmGreatness.com. God bless Lord Black. This is America First, back with your calls here on the Salem Radio Network. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation is marking its season of hope, and they need your help. The foundation is honoring America's heroes by donating 36 homes in 36 days. That's one home a day from Thanksgiving through New Year's Eve. Tunnel to Towers is gifting homes in more than two dozen states across our nation. They're bringing hope to great Americans, our catastrophically injured veterans, Gold Star, and fallen first responder families. The foundation is giving thanks to all of those who have sacrificed so much for us, and to the many people like you across this country who have supported their efforts to honor our nation's heroes. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Donate $11 a month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. T2T.org. Help bring hope to America's heroes and their families. Thank you. And one man who took his flight into the wild blue yonder more seriously than almost anybody else, especially when it was on the X-1 test aircraft. We know it was the Air Force anthem. We get it, and he started in the Army Air Corps. But, hey, he is a flyer and was a flyer for the rest of history. We miss you. Rest in peace, Chuck Yeager. And to celebrate the passing, where are these great Americans now? Really, what has happened to the concept, to the practice of being a great American? Let's listen to how he became who he was with a little clip from a documentary about this great patriot.
The sound barrier, Mach 1, was the first challenge. Others had tried to pass through it and lost their lives in the attempt. So an experimental aircraft, the X-1, was built to confront it. Its pilot was World War II ace Chuck Yeager.
The X-1 was mine because the old man said, okay, it's your program, get with it. And the only reason he picked me is because I was trained in maintenance and I understood systems and obviously could fly an airplane. We didn't look at ourselves as heroes, pioneers, or anything else. It's if we didn't do it, somebody else would. No airplane had ever flown much above 90% of the speed of sound until we got the X-1 up there. Every flight that we made, we were in a region where no one had ever had an airplane before. In fact, we didn't even have any wind tunnel data in that region. So it was every day something new.
On October 14, 1947, a B-29 with Yeager aboard and his X-1 slung beneath it took off. Yeager probably shouldn't have been flying.
I was hurting because I'd been in a horseback riding accident. Broke a couple ribs and hurt my shoulder a couple nights before, and I wasn't feeling too good, but the point was I made the decision to fly the airplane. Came back into Bombay, got on the ladder, and they slid the ladder down to your opposite nose on the X-1, and you're sitting here about 12,000 feet above the ground, the wind blowing, and you slide in feet first. That's the way you got into the X-1. fight itself just went as expected. We'd been having a lot of trouble with fires in the tail of the airplane and igniters that wouldn't work. Fortunately, they all worked that day, and we pushed the thing out. And really, once we got the Mach jump on the Mach meter and all the buffeting smoothed out, we got our first sonic boom here, then it almost was a letdown, you know, if the damn thing didn't blow up. The combat experience I had made me a very disciplined pilot, meaning that I learned to control my emotions and feelings toward the outcome. It didn't make any difference to me whether the X-1 blew into a million pieces or not. See, because I couldn't do anything about it. So we have to put it out of your mind. And you do that in combat. We realized that the so-called sound barrier really restricted us from going any faster. And once we got the X-1 above the speed of sound and smoked on out to Mach 2 and then beyond, so we realized, hey, this opens up the whole universe for us.
A man who is described as the most righteous of all the possessors of the right stuff. General Chuck Yeager, the man who broke the sound barrier, gone at 97. God bless you, Chuck. Let's go to your calls. Janet, Minneapolis, line 4. Welcome to America First.
Thank you for having me. I was listening to you and Conrad talk about issues with Trump, and I've had the fortune of meeting him. We're not big donors, but I had a couple experiences, and this thing has bugged me since day one. They said his character. His character is fine. He's extremely generous.
Yes.
He is easy to talk to.
He is.
And he's interesting, and he asks you a question, and then he waits until you answer it, and then he repeats it.
Yeah.
People don't do that.
No.
So I've struggled with this for years, and I finally said, it's not his character they're upset with. It's his style. And his style is holding himself accountable because he's a can-do guy, but it's also holding others who deal with him accountable.
Ooh, I like
and
that.
So it gets kind of boisterous, but it is a style issue because character-wise, he's rich. He can spend his money where he wants.
Let me stop you right there, Janet, because I think you've really nailed it. I don't think it's his hair, his skin color, the way he dresses, the way he talks. I think you've nailed it. It's he holds others accountable. He has his whole life. Whether you're building a building for him, whether you're not fixing the ice rink in New York, he holds people accountable. And that is the last thing the swamp wants. Republican or Democrat or think tank or media is to be held accountable, and that's why we voted for him. Fabulous call. Janet, stay on the line. Eric, let's give Janet a signed copy of The War for America's Soul. And by the way, you can get all three books, exclusive Christmas treat, signed at my webpage, sebgorka.com, S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A. Go today. We're coming to you live from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, drug-free pain relief that actually works. Don't take my word for it. See the incredible video testimonials at ReliefFactor.com and then find out for yourself by ordering the three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That translates to less than a dollar a day. Is that not worth it to you? What can you get for less than a dollar? I tell you what, potential liberation from your pain. Call them now, 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, 800-500-8384. Do it now.
I know Sebastian well. Listen to him. He's with us.
Thank you, Mr. President. We are back. This is America First, and I'm so grateful to all of you who've provided enough donations to get Christmas presents to more than 1,300 girls and boys across this nation who have a mother or father in prison today. A mother like Michelle, who helped her fellow inmates fill out their forms and get those presents to their children, some of them quite frightening.
Scary women women I would have been frightened of were now sitting across from me in this little tiny room where our knees are actually almost touching. And I'm helping them fill out an application for their children for Angel Tree. Angel Tree brought in hope, a little ray of light to a very, very dark place, and allowed us moms to be able to reach outside the prison walls to our families and let our children know that they weren't forgotten and that we were still thinking about them.
Wow, imagine if that were you, trying to connect with your child. But it's possible. You can help. For $22, you'll be getting a Christmas gift to that girl or boy. Also a children's Bible and a letter of love, a little note from their incarcerated mother or father. It is one of the most blessed things you can do for children in America who don't deserve to be in this situation, who are probably feeling shame for what their parents did. Let's help them. Let's be that Christmas angel. Go to our website right now, sebgorka.com, and click on the Angel Tree banner. You can call the Prison Fellowship at 888-206-2794. That's 888-206-2794. Or just go to sebgorka.com, sebgorka.com, and click on the Angel Tree banner. Any donation makes a difference, but think of this. $220 provides a better Christmas for 10 children in America. Be one of those people. Now, let's go back to Staten Island. Let's talk about the case that I think is changing America one night at a time, one demonstration at a time. And let's listen to how the authorities, the mayor, is responding. This is Mayor de Blasio. Not his real name. For some reason, he's hiding his German name and masking it with an Italian one. And this is what he has to say about the owner of Max Public House. Cut four.
I'm sure this is a guy who would say he's all in favor of law and order. And, you know, he's making a big deal about what's happened with his bar. Well, guess what? Law and order means when the state of New York says your bar needs to be closed, your bar needs to be closed to protect people's health and safety. No excuses. And when you violate the law, there will be consequences. And then if you take an action against a law enforcement officer, there will be even more consequences. So this guy is a hypocrite, and he's about to pay the price for his hypocrisy.
He's about to pay the price, really? De Blasio, have you paid the price for turning New York into a ghost town? Let's ask the man you've seen on the news regularly. He is the counsel to Danny Presti, the co-owner of that bar. He is counsel Louis Gelormino. Louis, welcome to America First.
Sebastian, thanks for having me. I must say that my wife is your absolute biggest fan, so thanks for having me.
Why do guys always say this? You can admit that you're the fan. You don't have to say it's your wife. I get this all the time. Big guys come up to me and say, hey, my wife loves you. It's okay. You can admit it. We're modern men. It's okay. We don't swing that way. Louis, I appreciate it. After the interview, stay on the line and we'll get her a signed book. Louis, does it help? Do you have to be an Italian to be tough in Staten Island, or does it just help?
It definitely helps. I'm a proud Staten Islander. I grew up here. I grew up here my whole entire life, and I was never so proud to be as a Staten Islander as I was the other day when 2,000 of my friends and neighbors came out in support of Danny and Keith and Max Alehouse. And you know what, Sebastian? They protested peacefully.
Yes.
No negativity. No looting. No rioting. And they actually stayed and cleaned up afterwards.
Oh, my gosh. Of course they did, because they're patriots. They're true Americans. Look, we played the video of the call the night before to come out to Max and to show strength. Then we played the incredible video, the clip of you and Danny. And I think it filled the hearts, not just of Italians, not just of Staten Islanders, but Americans who've had enough and are standing up for the principles of free trade and responsibility. Give us the latest update. The mainstream media is coming after Danny for some incident with a police officer. What's the latest, please, Louis?
Well, that's exactly what the sheriff's department wanted to happen when they sent out an absolute, completely false, absolute lie press release early Sunday morning stating an officer that was involved in the incident broke both his legs. That was an absolute lie. We have videotape of after the incident where he supposedly got hurt, running down the street after the car like he was a wide receiver for the New York Jets.
How does he do that with broken legs, Louis?
You know what? All he wanted to do, the sheriff, was change the narrative against Danny, and that's exactly what happened. But we're getting the narrative back by getting the truth out there. You know, Sebastian, Danny was leaving his restaurant. Picture this. Have your listeners picture this. He was leaving his restaurant 12:20 in the night. He walks two blocks away from his bar on a dark Staten Island street where he parked his car. Out of the shadows, jumped two burly people in big black outfits, not marked the sheriff's, with two skull caps on. They yell, "Hey, Presti," from behind him and start chasing him up the block from 25 yards away.
Wow.
And that was the impetus for the whole incident.
All right. We need more details. I need to find out from you. We're talking to the counsel, to the attorney, to the owner, the co-owner of Max Public House. It's Louis Gelormino. Please, can you stay on the line just for a few more minutes?
Sure, I'd love to. Thanks.
All right, stay on the line. We want the latest update. And I want to share with you my appreciation for what these men are doing, for Danny, for Louis, for the other owner of that bar, because it's about time. We've waited 9 months, and we have to show these crooked, hypocritical politicians that America has enough. I'm Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump, host of America First, here on the Salem Radio Network, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios, just outside the insalubrious, fetid swamp that is Washington, D.C. Relief Factor, drug-free pain relief that works. How do I know that? I don't have a script. I don't read talking points. I've lived it now for almost 2 years. I had a lower back pain issue that had plagued me for 9 years, almost a decade. I took Relief Factor, and 2 weeks later, I was pain-free, and I'm still pain-free. Just like Reggie from Florida. Reggie, I have a lot of pain from aging, and after only 4 days of using Relief Factor, I'm already experiencing less pain and stiffness. Can't wait to see how I feel in a couple more weeks. Relief Factor is a blessing sent by God. Wow. Don't you deserve to find out if you could be the next Reggie? Of course you do. Go to ReliefFactor.com right now. Order the 3-week quick starter pack or call 800-500-8384. I guarantee you it'll be at your house in 3 days or less if you take it morning and evening just like I do. I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you'll know if it works for you like it works for me, Reggie, and thousands of your fellow Americans. Don't you deserve to find out? You've waited long enough. Do it now. 800-500-8384, or just go to ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Back with Louis Gelormino after these messages. Don't touch that dial.
Portions of today's program are brought to you by Prison Fellowship.
And, of course, the great Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, the pillow that never gets hot, never loses shape. Now more than 60% off if you use my name, MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A. Buy them for Christmas. You will not regret it. I use them. The president uses them. 800-829-8468, MyPillow.com. That's 800-829-8468, MyPillow.com. We are back with a man who represents Max in Staten Island. He is Louis Gelormino. What is the spirit? Tell us what the plans are for Danny and his fellow co-owner. They're trying to shut him down so he can't feed his children. He can't make the paychecks for his employees. What is left for this man?
Hopefully, we can get him back in business somewhere soon. We're fighting the fines, over 50,000 fines that were given to Max Public House on the civil end. As far as the criminal end, that's going to take some time with these serious charges that they put against them. We certainly feel confident that we can get him out of those, and he will be exonerated from them. But the fight continues, and the fight continues for all small business owners who my partner Mark Fonte and I have been supporting for the last 9 months and representing on a pro bono basis for the last 9 months.
So let's be clear here. You're fighting the good fight. The civil actions, criminal actions, you've got to resist. Is there any way that the people of Staten Island or anybody across America can help you or Danny or Max Public House?
Oh, we appreciate that. You know, Danny and Keith started the GoFundMe, not for themselves, but small business so they can help out other small businesses. Uh-huh. It's Max for Small Businesses on the GoFundMe, Max for Small Businesses. Everybody's been incredibly supportive. We support our brothers in arms down in California and understand the plight they're going through. At least they've got a sympathetic judge to give them a favorable ruling. We're hoping we get the same over here, but so far we haven't. We've brought four or five lawsuits already, Sebastian.
Incredible. So that's the GoFundMe site, Max for Small Businesses. That's Max for Small Businesses. And you guys are going to keep on fighting, correct, Louis?
We will be fighting until this tyranny ends and we can get our country back to normal. Sadly, I think it's going to be a long fight.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. But I think you use the right words. It is a tyranny. And America fights, defeats, and vanquishes tyranny. Stay on the line, Louis, and let's end this hour with Red Tails.
From the last plane, to the last bullet, to the last minute, to the last man, we fight!
We fight!
We fight!
We fight!
We fight!
We fight! We fight!